Okay, let's go ahead and begin our hearings for this morning. The time is 9:02 a.m. It is Friday, September 15th, 2017. Time, as indicated, is 9:02 a.m. My name is Wanda Williams. I'm the Deputy Zoning Administrator for the County of Santa Cruz. I will be conducting the hearings for three scheduled items on our agenda this morning. Doesn't look like we have any continued items. They are all new items. And typically what we do for zoning administrator hearings is to ask for a brief staff presentation to summarize the salient points of an application and to identify if there are any proposed corrections or revisions to the report or findings or conditions attached to the report. And then following that, we will open it up for public testimony. And we typically begin by allowing the applicant or the applicant's representative to provide any remarks, to clarify any points. If you object to any proposed conditions or findings, to indicate at that time. You are not required to provide any testimony or remarks regarding your item. But because these are recorded hearings, that is your opportunity if you want to go on the record regarding any item. Following that, we will open it up for members of the public, and we will provide 3 minutes for individual members of the public, the same time as allotted for the applicant or applicant's representative, to provide any remarks regarding an item, raise any questions, or just make general comments regarding an item on our agenda, a scheduled item. And then following that, we will attempt to make a determination to decide whether to approve or deny an item. From time to time, it's necessary to continue an item. And if so, we'll try and do that to a specific date. And occasionally, we need to remand an item, just pull an item from an agenda and remand it back to staff for further consideration. So having said that, let's go ahead and begin with item number one on our agenda for this morning, and it is application 171083 for 257 21st Avenue in Santa Cruz, APN 028-17227. This is a request to operate a new vacation rental previously permitted as a three-bedroom vacation rental that it expired on 2-3-2017. And this will be operated as a four-bedroom vacation rental, and it requires a residential vacation rental permit. The property, as noted, is located at 257 21st Avenue on the southwest corner of Portola Drive and 21st Avenue. The owners are James and Kathy S. Way. The applicants are James and Kathy S. Way. It is in Supervisory District 1. Project planner is Elizabeth Hayward, and we will ask for a brief staff presentation.
Good morning. The subject property is approximately 6,422 square feet and is developed with a 2,226 square foot four-bedroom, two-story single-family dwelling with an attached garage and storage. It is located in the R14 single-family residential zone district, which allows vacation rental uses. The proposed short-term residential vacation rental is a conditionally permitted use within the zone district, and the zoning is consistent with the residential urban medium general plan designation. Vacation rentals are subject to a standard list of conditions as required by County Code Section 1310-694. These conditions are required to be included in the rental lease agreement for all vacation rentals. They address the permitted occupancy, allowed parking, noise, quiet hours, trash handling, any illegal behavior, and require 24-hour contact, in addition to other lease details. In conformance with the vacation rental ordinance, the maximum permitted occupancy for this home would be 10 overnight guests, with a maximum of 20 guests allowed between 8 a.m. and 10 p.m. The ordinance also limits parking for vacation rentals to the number of recognized on-site parking spaces, 8.5 by 18 in size, plus 2 on-street parking spaces. There are potentially 3 parking spaces on the parcel and 2 on the street. Likely, the street parking will be on the north side of the property on Portola Drive, since this area of 21st Avenue has many driveway encroachments which limit the street parking availability on 21st. The lease agreement specifies that parking for 5 vehicles. Additionally, the lease agreement contains language advising tenants to park on-site in the driveways and not to block the street. In the conditions, vacation rental permits and lease agreement are not, if the conditions and vacation rental of the vacation rental permit and lease agreement are not adhered to, neighbors may contact a designated 24-hour contact person who resides in Capitola, who should be available to resolve any complaints that may arise. The 24-hour contact information is posted at the front of the house on the Planning Department website and was included with the hearing notices that were sent to all property owners within 300 feet of the site. Neighborhood comments were received during the processing of this application. The primary concerns regarding this vacation rental permit were in regard to excessive and late night noise, especially in the backyard near the hot tub area. Also included were complaints regarding parking and trash disposal. Most of these concerns should be addressed by the standard conditions of approval for all vacation rentals. Additionally, the lease agreement specifies quiet hours, and there is signage in the backyard reiterating the quiet hours after 10 o'clock posted near the hot tub. In order to allow evaluation of permit compliance in the Live Oak designated area where this property is located, vacation rental permit approvals must be renewed every 5 years. In the event of substantiated, verifiable, and ongoing noncompliance with permit conditions, a renewal of this permit may be conditioned or denied. Also, in the Live Oak designated area, there is an imposed limit of 15% of all residential parcels allowed as vacation rentals and a maximum of 20% per block that can be permitted as vacation rentals. Therefore, of the 18 homes on this block of 21st Avenue between Portola Drive and Eastcliff Drive, up to 4 dwellings may be permitted as vacation rentals. Currently, there is only one vacation rental on this block in addition to this request. Based on the requirements implemented by the ordinance, staff believes, as conditioned, the project is consistent with all applicable codes and policies of the Zoning Ordinance, General Plan, and Local Coastal Program, and therefore recommends that you find the project exempt from further review under CEQA and approve application number 171083 for a residential vacation rental permit along with the attached findings and conditions. Thank you.
Okay. So this was previously granted as a three-bedroom
yes.
vacation rental, and it was discovered by staff, or when was it discovered that it was being used as a four-bedroom?
After the vacation rental was approved as a three-bedroom, there was a residential addition done. And then I believe at that time is when it started being used as a four-bedroom vacation rental. Also, as part of their website advertising, it was advertised as a four-bedroom vacation rental, and it was also brought to our attention from neighbors.
Was the residential addition constructed legally?
Yes, it was done with all permits.
Okay. And that was approved as what? Was it approved as an additional bedroom or what?
Oftentimes people will have a living room addition.
Mm-hmm.
This was approved as a living room, but that doesn't disallow it being used as a sleeping quarters. It has the same residential building plan check as a bedroom would.
Okay.
And it's not uncommon.
Okay, and then the code compliance and sheriff's complaints pertained to what? You indicated noise associated with
noise.
The hot tub or what?
Noise, late night noise. Much of the complaints included hot tub noise. We have about one complaint verified by code compliance per year. And then the sheriff on record had two complaints, but no citations.
So I'm not sure I'm clear on that. Two complaints but no citations. They just went out and told them to shut it down or what?
Right. As part of processing vacation rentals,
mm-hmm.
we always check with the sheriff's office to see if there have been any citations
uh-huh.
issued or how many complaints they've received.
Okay.
And I double-checked on this one because there were complaints regarding noise, how many times the sheriff had responded on record, and they have it down as twice.
Did they just indicate in general that it was a complaint regarding noise, or were they more specific?
It was specific to noise, and then there was something to do with a telephone conversation between neighbors.
Okay. The 24-hour contact?
Yes.
Does that person live in Santa Cruz, or is it a vacation rental service, or what?
It's a private party in Capitola.
Okay, so let's go ahead and open it up the hearing for public testimony. I may have some additional questions of staff after we take testimony, but let's open it up. If the applicant or applicant's representative is here and would like to provide any remarks regarding application 171083, or if you want to clarify anything stated in the staff report or discuss this morning with staff, or have concerns regarding any proposed findings or conditions, now is your time to do so. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and we will give you 3 minutes. Good morning.
Morning. So I'm the applicant, Jim Esway. I agree with all the conditions. Just wanted to clarify some of the violations. If you've ever lived in a home in Santa Cruz where there's a hot tub, it really doesn't matter how loud you speak, the sound travels. And at one time we had this property managed by a vacation rental management company. In the last 5 years, I've changed that. I personally manage it. I own a real estate management company. And before anybody checks in and settles in, the very first thing I say is that we have neighbors that we'd like to keep happy. And one of the ways we can do that is to, you know, be considerate of noise and trash and parking and so forth. So that's something that I've implemented. We also have a sign in the back. In the times that we have had violations, I've been called personally. They were not parties. They were people just talking. And unfortunately, it is loud just when you talk with the water. So I'm actually changing that to 9 o'clock, even though you say 10. People tend to slide past that. And so I think that's a reasonable change as far as people there. You know, there is a deck in the front and there is a hot tub in the back. We do not allow parties. Most of the use is clients, friends, and family, but we do have rentals in the summertime. Most of the use is during the summertime. The rest of it's a lot of related parties. So I do have a desire to be a good neighbor. It is being used, so I can't change the use of it, but I can certainly be considerate of any concerns that are addressed here today.
Okay, so is it your contention or your belief that the parties that you've rented to, where there were complaints lodged with the sheriffs and with code compliance, those were good renters, but that the proximity of the hot tub to the property line, the deck to the property line, and the general narrowness of lots down there, that sound just traveled?
I would say all the above. I had one time, to my knowledge, where it was a person that was, people like to sit in the hot tub and have a beer or a glass of wine, but one was a friend when it was called and the police was out and I talked to them. Another was my partner who had a family, and they just didn't think it was loud and they just didn't understand. So I've cracked down a lot harder, and I actually tell people they'll lose their deposit of $500 if there's a violation. So, you know, you tell people, you expect them to honor the rules, but, you know, sometimes that doesn't occur, and so I'm trying to...
Okay, you indicated you cracked down, that they would lose the deposit or be evicted. Is
correct.
That contained in the lease agreement?
Yes, as well as... there's a reminder and a welcome letter that we provide, as well as when I call them.
Okay.
So.
And you've posted on the exterior and interior that no outdoor activity after, I guess right now it's 10 p.m.
It's 10, but I'm going to change that to 9, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And typically when you had a three-bedroom, when you were approved for a three-bedroom vacation rental, typically how often was the residence rented as a vacation home?
Mostly in the summertime, and then off and on through the fall, very little bit in the winter. Mm-hmm. And again, we use it quite a bit. I have a partner, and he has a family, so there's quite a bit of use amongst family and friends.
Is the one-car garage being used for storage at this time?
We have a ping pong table in there, so generally it's not. We don't use it for a car unless it's needed, and that's rare.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that's all I have.
Staff, can I just clarify before we go on to the next speaker? Does he need three spaces on site?
Yes, okay. For a four-bedroom house, three spaces are required.
So he needs the two in the garage. I'm sorry, in the driveway and the garage.
Yes.
Okay.
And to clarify, I have two very long driveways that accommodate easily two cars on each side.
Okay.
We had a pretty large lot, so we had lots of room for that on site.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to ask you about that again later. Okay, let's go ahead and open it up for further public testimony. If there's any other member of the public that would like to speak on our first item on the agenda, application 171083, please come forward, state your name for the record, and we will give you 3 minutes to do so. Good morning.
Morning. I'm Sam Lazarakis. I live in 255 21st Street neighbor. In fact, the only neighbor, because on the other side of the street is just Portola Avenue. And I highly object to going to the four-bedroom rental. Ever since that was done, the amount of parking's way worse. Usually there's six cars out in front of the place, five or six cars. They're hanging over on my driveway. I get the trash. I get the noise. I'm the one that wrote when the original application came out, said they're renewing for a three-bedroom. So I noticed there was a lot more people and stuff, went on their website, and basically it's four-bedroom. And I was wondering, okay, why is there more and more people here? And they have on their website, at least when I submitted my letter to the staff, basically there could be up to 12 adults in the rental property. I mean, it's like living next to a hotel with the amount of people, the amount of cars. They have 12 people that can be there, and then they invite their friends over. I'm constantly going over there to tell them to keep quiet, and I guess I'll start calling the sheriff's department more, I guess, if that's what's required. There's cars everywhere. There's trash everywhere. They use my trash sometimes when there's overflows because they have so many people there. I get cigarette butts, cigar butts, other paraphernalia thrown over the fence. It's really become, you know, I retired now. I want to enjoy Santa Cruz. I don't want to be every time I'm over there going over there to tell them, keep it down. You're too noisy. The car's in my driveway, those sorts of things. It's just unmanageable.
Okay. What is the fence height, do you know, between your property and this property?
It's a normal-sized fence. I've let some of the bushes grow up, but like on hot tubbing. I mean, we've been there when my, you know, nephews are over, mm-hmm. and they're younger, mm-hmm. and there's nude sunbathing going on in there, which you can see right into it in the hot tub. I mean, it's just...
You're saying a normal fence height. So I'm assuming 6 feet?
Yeah, but we have a deck on our side, so you can...
Oh, okay.
And we're two-story.
So you're
elevated. We're two-story, and we can, you know, you see right in there, you hear all the noise.
So it wouldn't matter if it's a 12-foot, if you got a deck
right.
on the second story.
Right. There's one thing with three
How
bedrooms...
How often do you sit out there and use your deck?
A lot more now that I'm retired, yes.
Okay.
So we're out there quite a bit. And it's just, it's not like living in Santa Cruz where you're relaxing. It's constant during the summer.
And you indicated a lot of outdoor trash or debris.
Yes.
Is it like strewn across the street, their property, or what is it? How do you know?
I just get stuff over my fence. You know, they're smoking a cigar, nothing will, you know, throw it over the fence or whatever. I mean, they're renters. There's no regard for property with the renters. So it's very frustrating.
Okay.
And like I said, I've noticed a big increase since it went to the four bedrooms than it was the three bedrooms.
And the cars, you're saying, are on the street or in their circular driveway?
No, it's two straight driveways, and then there's cars parked on the side of the side of the street in front
right.
of the two things.
Right.
It looks like a used car lot.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Is there anyone else that has not spoken on application 171083 that wishes to do so this morning? Please come forward and state your name for the record. Now is the time to do so. Item number one on our agenda. This is your final opportunity to go on record. Okay, there is no one else. I'm going to close the hearing from further public testimony, and I'm going to ask staff about the parking, because the staff report indicated, I believe, two parking spaces on the driveway?
One on each driveway. There
okay.
are two driveways. And then there is, as he stated, the ping pong table is in the other, in the garage area. It's a portable ping pong table that people, that can be folded and moved. Oftentimes people store things in their garages. But for the four-bedroom residential addition, it was recognized as a parking space that is available, and there's no permanent fixtures that would disallow that.
Can the driveways accommodate two parking spaces each? I can't. On this one, I don't recall.
I've got a picture I can show you if you'd like. But they are not 36 feet long, which is what would be required for the
8-2
tandem. Yeah, they don't. They're not 18 feet long to have completely on site. They're about 30 feet long.
Yeah.
So they could accommodate them, but they wouldn't be completely on site. Then there would be part of the second vehicle not in the roadway, but out off the property line.
Okay, if the applicant can come back to the microphone, Mr. S.Y.
Did you want to see...
I'm sorry?
Did you want to see a picture of the front of the house?
No, because I sort of recall it.
Okay.
I'm confusing it with item number 3 on the agenda. But so typically for the vacation renters, are these families? Are they college students? Are they?
Most of them are family. I don't allow wedding parties and parties, young people by themselves. I mean, I'm pretty particular, and I do all the screening myself.
So they typically arrive in, I don't want to say high occupancy vehicles where you've got, but multiple parties in one vehicle.
It varies. For the most part, I would say the average renter would be 8 people. And occasionally, if they live in the area, they may have somebody over. Which is allowed, but some of these things are new to me. I didn't know people were throwing cigarettes and cigars, and I've given Sam my number. I mean, I want to enforce it. I'm a neighbor. I know most of my neighbors here, and I wouldn't want that. So,
what's the height of the fence? Do you know?
It's standard. I'm guessing 8 feet.
Do you know?
Whatever standard height?
Photos, it looks to be about 6 feet.
6 feet.
It could be between 6 and 8 feet, which would be in compliance with fence height requirements, too.
Is it a block wall, or is it a
It's a wooden fence. With there's actually landscaping that goes up about where the deck is. It's about 3 feet above the fence. So if it's 6, it'd be about 9-10 feet.
So the landscaping goes above.
Yeah,
the fence.
It's a large hedge between Sam's property and ours.
And is the hedge, are there openings, or is it pretty dense?
It's pretty dense, except for where the deck is. There's his deck and our deck.
Uh-huh.
There's an opening there where his gate is.
Is there the potential to install additional landscaping there, or would that interfere with his
use? There is landscaping there. It's just not a hedge. There's basically a tree, with a flowering tree and some other landscaping, but it's just not a large hedge.
And did you intend to use the garage for parking?
If necessary, we can, yes. And I can limit the parking more. I mean, if that's an issue.
How would you limit the parking?
Well, I would just specify that, in our agreement with each of the parties. Usually they will tell us 2 to 3 cars, but
okay.
If they do something beyond what they tell us, that's something I've just got to rely on a neighbor to tell me, I gave Sam my phone number, and I can personally address that. I don't want to be a bad neighbor. So,
okay. So once again, your lease agreement requires that they specify a number of vehicles.
Yes, it does.
That they're arriving in.
Correct.
And you have the ability, if they say we're bringing 5 cars, then you have the ability
yes.
to deny that
Correct.
Request. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have private trash pickup? Who does your trash pickup?
It's through the public, but if there's an issue with it, if somebody calls me and says, hey, we're running out of room, I have a maintenance staff that will come by and pick it up.
And has anyone ever done that?
I've had to do that a few times, yeah.
Okay. And your maintenance staff is on call?
They're local. They do service to the house at least once a week.
Okay. So let me ask you, say for instance, regarding some of these complaints, I'm assuming for the sheriffs that they came late at night.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say for instance that your neighbor contacted you instead and said someone's out there using the
yes.
hot tub, it's
right.
11 o'clock, they
yep.
were supposed to stop at 9. How quickly would you respond and be over there?
Well,
or would you just call, or what would you do?
Yeah, the two times I did receive calls were at midnight. So I spoke to them the next morning. I called the tenant, and it stopped. And I told them I'd kick them out, and, you know, it stopped immediately. So instead of waiting for a problem, I circumvent it now with every time they check in and address these issues, hearing some of these new issues, I will address those as well.
Do you have the ability, if they call in at 11 or 12 at night, to get up and go over there physically at that time?
I have someone that would, yeah. Usually, though, I probably won't hear the phone. It's my cell phone that they have called, or another cell phone. A lot of people, you know, at midnight, you typically shut it off.
Hmm.
So
that might be a problem with you shutting your phone off.
Yeah, no, I can change that.
Because the contact, I believe, is supposed to be
yes.
available 24 hours.
Right.
Even though you're not required to immediately respond, but I think if you live nearby and you've had numerous complaints coming from the sheriffs and code compliance, seems like you or someone else, if you get a call about that, you want to get over there and
right.
put that to bed or rest very
right.
quickly. You want to deal
yeah,
with that.
Those calls were a few years ago, and in recent months haven't had any calls like that, but I've tried to address it on the front end now.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to ask staff, regarding that fence and the opening in the hedge, is there a solution or any way to address that? Because I'm kind of putting you on the spot.
That's a good question. I'm trying to recall from my site visit how much foliage was there.
Yeah.
I imagine that could be restructured or a fence height potentially increased up to 8 feet with foliage to help mitigate the noise on the south side of the house, especially near the
okay.
hot tub area.
Okay.
I'd have to double check.
Okay.
So.
And okay.
Also, I just wanted to clarify, there is a local emergency contact person in Capitola in addition to the applicant who lives out of the area.
A local, I'm sorry, contact?
Emergency contact person in accordance with the code. There is a local person here in Capitola also in addition to the applicant.
So who gets contacted? I thought the applicant indicated
who
he
we
gets
have
contacted.
I apologize.
Can you come back to the... I guess I'm a little bit confused. I thought that you got contacted. Is it
I
you
personally
or
have, because I know this neighbor when
okay.
they had called, but it's a gentleman named Henry. He does a lot of service for us there, and he lives local.
Okay, so Henry would be contacted.
He fixes plumbing issues, landscape issues,
okay.
so he's been available, and he's within
So once again, let's
away.
Say 1 o'clock in the morning, two of the guests are angry, they're
call.
Out there fighting or out there
yes.
playing around.
He would get
the
that
music
call.
Blasting.
And, yes.
Do you get the call or does Henry get the call?
He would get it, but I've also gotten a call
okay.
just from this one
and
neighbor.
Does Henry get up and come over to address
if,
that?
If
or
necessary,
what does he do? Or does
yeah.
he just pick up the phone and call him?
No, if necessary, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, what is you're saying is necessary?
Well, what happened in the two times is the police came and they just saw somebody using the hot tub. It wasn't a party, it wasn't a violent situation. They just shut it down at that point.
So had they contacted you or Henry before, or your vacation rep, before they contacted the
It was after the sheriffs. Fact. They had the police out there, and the police, I've spoken to the police
okay.
each time, and they said there was no problem. It was just people were talking in the back, and so The police will respond, but if it's not belligerent people and a party, they're not going to do much about it.
But typically, the police will respond when the 24-hour contact has not responded.
Yes.
Then they pick up the phone and call the sheriffs and say, you know, I've complained to the 24-hour contact. There's nobody picking up the phone. He's got his cell phone turned off.
Right.
And this other contact is not coming. He told me he'd take care of it, but it's still going on.
Right.
That's the concern that I have.
Yeah, no.
That if you had that for a three-bedroom vacation rental and we're going to approve an additional bedroom, what's going to happen now?
Mm-hmm.
With the parking, the noise. I want to make sure that there's somebody that's responding, that's very responsive.
Absolutely.
That's there and not relying upon the sheriffs because we have other criminal activity.
I agree.
And situations that are much more pressing that they need to respond to.
I agree.
Rather than coming out, breaking up a couple of guys, throwing water balloons at one another.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, so having heard the testimony, I am a little bit concerned about going to a four-bedroom. I'm concerned even about a three-bedroom based upon the complaints that have come into code compliance and to the sheriffs. However, let me ask, did you include a condition that this one comes back or that we get a report?
I did not
in the future.
This one.
So let's do that. Let's say in 1 year, actually we've been doing 18 months, I think. So let's stick to the 18 months. In 18 months, this one is to come back as a, it's not to come back as a hearing item. It is to come back just as a report provided by staff regarding the status of this. So you will, during the next 18 months, you would need to go out there on a periodic basis to verify that things have not changed, that suddenly we don't have a five-bedroom vacation rental, that the garage does not contain a ping-pong table or is being used for other storage purposes, but it's being used actually for vehicle storage, that there's not trash or litter thrown about on the property. So I'm going to, first of all, determine that this proposal is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act. I'm going to approve this application based on the findings incorporated in the staff report with the additional condition that in 18 months, staff will come back with a report. And then based upon that report, we will determine whether or not further action needs to be taken. And if further action needs to be taken, we have to follow what the code says. We can't automatically just revoke or elevate that at that point. So we'll look for a report in 18 months. I will require as a condition that the garage be maintained free of furniture, recreational, other items so that it is accessible for a standard vehicle for parking. I'm going to require that the applicant work with staff to attempt to address that opening in the landscaping hedge. That may not be possible, but let's see if we can come up with a solution for that for the adjacent neighbor. Let's see the cars. I'm going to indicate also that and this is stated and it's implicit in the vacation rental ordinance, that the 24-hour contact person responds in a reasonable period of time. But I'm going to require for this one that either the applicant or a 24-hour contact be fully responsive to complaints that come in. And that means do not rely upon the sheriffs to go out and do your work. You respond to the complaints. And then if they call the sheriffs in addition to that, it's all, you know, it's gravy on top of that then. But I think you need to demonstrate that you are being a little bit more responsive. But we will get a report on that in 18 months as well. I'm also going to indicate the 9 p.m. The applicant indicated the 9 p.m. restriction on outdoor uses. I'm going to indicate that be posted on in the back area adjacent to the hot tub, that it also be posted on the door that leads to the exterior deck on the interior of the residence, that you have that posted. And I think that that's it in terms of added conditions. And then, as noted, staff, if you can, or let's try and get out there periodically to check on that site and make sure we don't have additional problems occurring. And then in 18 months, hopefully, we find that we don't have further sheriff's complaints, further code compliance complaints that we need to follow up on. So that concludes that matter. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay. So we are going to move on to item number two on our agenda, which is application 171030 for 875 Calabasas Road in Watsonville, APN 049-38107. This is a request to construct a 78-foot tall monopine wireless communications facility for T-Mobile with an initial installation of 6 flat panel antennas, 6 remote radio units, and a microwave dish located within a 3,500 square foot fenced enclosure with 2 ground mounted cabinets, a generator, an equipment panel, and a propane tank mounted on a 195 square foot concrete pad. This project requires a commercial development permit and a Federal Telecom Act exception for being located in the RA zone, which is designated a restricted area in the county code. The property, as noted, is located at 875 Calabasas Road, about 200 feet southeast of the intersection with Morning Sun Ranch Road. The owners are Robert and Loretta Hunt. The applicant is Trisha Knight, representing Anthem Telecom. It is in Supervisorial District 2. The project planner is Lizanne Jeffs, and we will ask for a staff presentation.
Good morning. Before I start my presentation, I just wanted to pass on some additional information. At 9:02 this morning, I received a 27-page letter from a neighbor, Matt Stoffel, at 877 Calabasas Road. I've had no more time than just to really just quickly look over it. I certainly will not be able to address any issues in there other than that I can see that there it has an inaccuracy about height that I'll deal with, and then another short
note. So have you been able to read through it? You haven't been able to read through it?
Not in detail, no, I have not. It arrived after the hearing started this morning. It's lucky I caught it.
Item number three is yours also.
But I'll have a copy for you.
Yeah, but you know what? Let's go ahead and take a 10-minute break. You probably can't read through it entirely, but I'll give you 10 or 15 minutes to look at it since it just came in. Let's just make sure that we don't have something there that requires us to continue this matter. So let's take a 15-minute break. I'll read through that and give the planner a chance to look through it a little bit. And so we'll come back at 5 minutes till 10. Thank you. Okay, we're going to go ahead and begin. We're going to start up once again. It looks like it is 10 o'clock. So let's go ahead and start up on item number two on our agenda, application 171030.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is the request to construct the 78-foot-tall monopine on property that is zoned as RA. In the RA zone, that is a restricted area for wireless communication facilities, and the code indicates that where possible, you should not locate this type of facility on an RA-zoned property, and that you must go through certain, you must meet certain criteria in order to do so. So having said that, once again, the owners are Robert and Loretta Hunt. The applicant is Tricia Knight, representing Anthem Telecom. It is in Supervisorial District 2. The project planner is Lizanne Jeffs, and we will ask for a staff presentation.
Good morning. So the project site is located in the Aptos Hills planning area on a parcel that is developed with a single-family dwelling and other accessory structures. It is bounded on all sides by residential parcels that are designated in the general plan to be residential, and they're also developed with single-family dwellings. The zoning of all of the surrounding parcels is either RA or SU with a residential general plan. The existing dwelling on the parcel will be approximately 200 feet from the base of the proposed cell tower, and the nearest adjacent residence on the surrounding parcels is located approximately 325 feet from the base of the proposed cell tower. The parcel is located in an area of rolling hills with dense vegetation and significant stands of mature trees. The proposed cell tower is proposed to be located on an area of relatively high ground where it will be mostly surrounded by tall trees, including redwoods and pines, as well as oaks. Because of the slope site and surrounding vegetation, the interior of the site is not visible from Calabasas Road, except for maybe limited views looking directly up the driveway that are partially obstructed by vegetation. Some views into the site are also possible from neighboring parcels and the private right-of-way that wraps around the southern and western property boundaries, but these views are also obscured, at least in part, by intervening trees and other vegetation. The subject property is a parcel of about 4.88 acres located in the RA zone district, a designation that does allow wireless communication facility uses, but only with a Federal Telecom Act exception. The zoning is consistent with the site's rural residential general plan designation. In support of a Federal Telecom Act exception, the applicant has submitted information indicating that the proposed wireless communication facility location is necessary to close a significant gap. This is for T-Mobile. I'm not a T-Mobile customer myself, so I cannot check whether there's a gap in the T-Mobile network. In addition, they've submitted evidence that indicates that other potential alternative sites that would be in an allowed zone district that could close the gap are either not available or would be more visually obtrusive. Because of the rolling terrain in this area, the choice of sites is limited to parcels that are set at a higher elevation, which would to ensure that the desired coverage can be obtained. And the applicant has submitted information to support that they made attempts to find other viable sites that are also on similar higher elevation that are outside the restricted zone district, but that they were unable to secure a lease for any other site. Or there was one other site that they were potentially able to, but that they ruled out for technical reasons. The project site has also been chosen because of the surrounding mature vegetation, which allows for much better screening of the proposed wireless communication facility. And the proposed 78-foot-tall faux python tree will blend seamlessly into the existing public view. And so staff believes that the granting of an exception to allow the placement in the restricted zone district is warranted. I also note that if you look at a very wide area, there are no zone districts in this area that would permit a cell tower. Every potential site in the area would also require an exception. But I will leave further detail of the alternatives analysis to the applicant. County code also requires that within a restricted zone district, all new wireless communication facilities should be co-located on existing facilities wherever possible. I researched this, and there are currently no existing facilities in the area that are available that would give the same coverage in the same area. There is some further south, but it's a very different location. And the proposed monopine has been designed to allow for future co-location with up to three additional carriers. And I want to point out that the maximum height of this tower is 78 feet to the top of the vegetation, and that's been added as a condition of approval of this project. So the drawings that are shown are slightly inaccurate because they do not show that, but that will be required at the building permit stage. And I also, there's a condition of approval that requires that any co-location be as shown on the plans below the existing, the facilities that are shown on the existing plans, so that there will be no additional height to the tower without additional review. 78 feet is the maximum height allowed in this zone district. So the proposed monopine has been designed to allow for this co-location, and therefore, you know, it's not going to stand up any higher than the existing trees. The area is surrounded by a lot of mature trees, and there are Monterey pines, coast redwoods, eucalyptus trees, and oaks. And immediately adjacent to the proposed monopine, there's a 75-foot tall Monterey pine tree, so that the proposed monopine pole will only be 5 feet taller than the current height of the tree, which may, of course, grow in time. The proposed wireless communication facility has therefore been designed to fit in with the vegetation around it, and the color of the proposed foliage we've chosen to most closely blend with the color of the Monterey pine, and the pole will be textured and colored to resemble natural pine bark. Because of the surrounding trees, the new monopine pole will not appear to stand alone or loom over residences. As shown by the submitted visual simulation views that show the site both with and without the proposed wireless communication facility, the proposed monopine will blend in well with the existing rural backdrop, and thus the project will not significantly impact public views. I also want to add that I went out and I drove around, and I spent a considerable amount of time after the mock-up had been put up looking for significant public views. I really couldn't see it from anywhere. There was a glimpse as I drove along Calabasas Road, the view that I thought you would most likely see. But literally, as you come around the corner, you see it, and then it's gone, and it's right. It's sort of just popping out from behind a tree. And another thing that I want to point out is in the letter I received this morning, the proposed fenced enclosure is said to be 50 feet by 30 feet in one place and 50 feet by 70 feet in another place. It actually will be 15 feet by 13 feet. And the fenced enclosure, which will be sort of situated in the center of the parcel in a current area that's lawn, it's surrounded by vegetation. There's oak trees and other shrubs, as well as the pines and other large trees. It'll be a fenced enclosure. All of the equipment will be below the level of the fence, and the fence itself is surrounded by landscaping with fast-growing drought-tolerant species that will be suitable to the site and will screen and soften the proposed fence. A radio frequency or RF emissions calculation report has been submitted for this project by a consulting engineer. The proposed facility is calculated to result in a maximum ambient RF level of no more than 0.7% of the applicable FCC public exposure limit anywhere at the ground level, and a 1.2% of that limit at the second floor elevation of any nearby dwelling. The engineers based that on the Google Maps that the closest residence was about 170 feet, I think, and that would be the home on the subject parcel. And actually, that structure is currently only a one-story home, so there is no home that would be subject even to the 1.2% at the second story. Although it's not directly related to the proposed cell tower, I wanted just to add that because a complaint has been given to the county regarding the construction of unpermitted structures on the subject parcel, research was done on those, and it was determined that indeed there were structures that were not legal. And so as a condition of approval of this application, before any building permit for the cell tower can be issued, the permits will have to be submitted by the property owner for the recognition or demolition of these unpermitted structures. And in addition, the cell tower will not be able to go live. A hold will be placed on the final of that building permit for the cell tower pending the approval and issuance of the required permits to resolve these violations. So therefore, it's proposed and conditioned, and with the proposed granting of a Federal Telecoms Act exception, allowing the siting of the wireless communication on an RA-zoned land. The project is consistent with all applicable codes and policies of the Zoning Ordinance and General Plan, and therefore staff recommends that the Zoning Administrator determine that this proposal is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act and approve application number 171030 based on the findings and conditions of the staff report. Thank you.
Thank you. I need a drink. What type of noticing did we do for this application?
Notices were sent to all neighbors within 1,000 feet. A notice was posted on the parcel and has been there for several weeks.
Anything else?
Notice was ran in the paper.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The notices that were all posted refer to a 78-foot tall monopine?
They do.
Okay. Okay, so let's go ahead and open it up for public testimony and comments. And so if the applicant is present, please come forward, state your name for the record, and we'll give you 3 minutes.
Good morning. Tricia Knight representing Anthem Telecom. I think staff did a great job of summarizing the project, and I can see there's going to be some public speakers here today. I'm here to answer any questions that you might have at this time, but I think I'll wait for public comment and then address any concerns or any additional questions at that time.
Well, I have some questions for you.
Sure.
Right now. So, what is the need for this particular communication facility?
If you look on page, look on your page numbers here, page 47 and 48 of your staff report, you'll see the coverage maps. So if you've had a chance to be back to this rural area recently, you can see it's fairly remote with respect to its rural nature. And so there is a true gap in coverage here. We don't find those very often anymore, being that telecommunications wireless has been around for a while now. So this is truly one of those areas that has a significant gap in coverage. I witness it when I drive out there with my cell phone. I'm a Verizon customer, but and so that is the need for that. This is part of a network specifically for T-Mobile that would help emergency services in the event that they needed to use the facility as well. So that's the need. I hope that answers your question.
I'm sorry, it would be used to assist emergency services?
Correct. If there was T-Mobile customers that used, if emergency services was a T-Mobile customer, this would assist them in closing or utilizing that gap in a true emergency.
Okay. Did you consider microcells?
We have. So the way microcells, I'm sure maybe you've seen them come before you, are typically utility poles. And so they are for small areas of lack of coverage or that have a capacity issue, which I consider to be like on-ramps on a highway. You have a lot of users trying to get on that highway, and that small cell will add another lane. This is the rural nature. If you've driven back there, it's a windy road. There are utility poles, but they don't easily connect to one another through the terrain. They're not tall enough, and so it's just not it's not the ideal way to obtain coverage in such a highly vegetated area, and also the terrain doesn't lend to it as well.
Okay, you indicated not tall enough. They could not be extended on utility poles?
They don't really have line of sight to one another. So there would be maybe three, and then you'd go around a curve, and that one doesn't have line of sight due to the vegetation. It's very wooded and rural.
How did you come up with the need for 78-foot height? Why did you determine that?
We did. There's a tree report in your staff report as well that analyzed the existing heights of the vegetation. Mm-hmm. So the one thing, unfortunately, that the antennas cannot do is see through trees. And so that, even though we are proposing a tree, they can't see through the needles and bark of a real tree. So we look at those, the overall height, I believe. Lizanne suggested that the tallest tree was 75 feet. So we're just trying to get over that tallest tree.
Well, assuming that the nearby natural tree or foliage would grow over time, and let's say if it's 75 feet now, perhaps in a year or two it would be 78 or 79 feet, then do you have an issue?
Not to my knowledge. I believe the staff report, they're slow-growing trees. They're not expected to grow significantly in that time frame. And we did stagger it slightly, so that 75-foot tree, is we're able to see over it, but it's also staggered, so I believe we're not. It's not an issue shooting into it.
Okay. Did you consider the possibility of trimming existing tree?
We had not looked into that. Typically, that's not something that messing with existing vegetation, mature vegetation, isn't something that is recommended by staff. But we did not. We did not, in answer to your question.
So if the monopole was to be reduced to 75 feet, based on its location, where it's staggered in relation to that adjacent, I think it's a pine, another pine tree.
It is, correct.
You would still have coverage, right?
Correct.
75 feet.
Correct.
Okay. What is the size of the ground enclosure?
15 by 13.
And what is the purpose of the propane tank?
So in a true emergency, the equipment has backup batteries. So let's say there's a power outage in that neighborhood. Those backup batteries go into play and they turn on, but they only last for about, I'd say, 24 hours. And so in a true emergency, where there would be a need for a generator is when that generator would kick on, and it's powered by propane. And that can run, I want to say, up to probably a week nonstop if needed in an actual true emergency. It is tested, as the staff report, or I think a supplement to the staff report suggested. It does turn on once a month for 15 minutes to make sure it's operational. The time of day that it turns on can be set, and also the length of time. But the generator is important in a true emergency if there was the need for it.
What is the maximum sound level of the generator you're proposing?
It's 65 decibels at 20 feet away from the generator. However, there was some correspondence with the neighbors that there was concern about that noise. And I know there's a condition that shows that we must be compliant with any noise standards from the generator edge to the nearest residential property line. And we want to be compliant with that. So we would obviously make sure that we issue a report. If we're shown that there is any non-compliance with that, we have the ability to shroud that generator to reduce those noise levels even further.
Okay, so let's talk about any type of alternatives analysis that was performed. How many other sites did you look at?
On page 45, it sort of outlines, just to point you to where we looked at that in the most recent correspondence with Lizanne. And so, as Lizanne has suggested, the entire area is in this restricted our special use zone. And so when they were looking around at the various parcels in the area, two of them at 899 and 877 Calabasas were initially looked at, but they're, I believe, either here or have submitted correspondence in opposition. So obviously that wasn't going to be a lease that we were going to be able to obtain. And then we looked at one other.
There was some opposition?
We have letters of opposition from both of those addresses, which are adjacent to this immediate property. So when you're asking about us looking at alternates, we had looked at those alternates as part of this application process. And so when we received letters of opposition from those two property owners, that is not considered, I don't think, a viable alternate.
Okay, when did you receive the letters of opposition?
Part of our application.
Okay.
Correct.
So when you were actually preparing and doing your alternatives analysis,
correct,
you received these letters. So it wasn't as a result of this application.
It was a result of this application, correct, is when we received the letters of opposition from the adjacent owners.
So prior to that, when you were gathering your materials and doing your alternatives analysis before coming in and filing, you looked at those sites?
Yes. So the way that it usually works is that there's several layers. Okay, so we have to be able to obtain a lease.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be able to construct it.
Okay.
It has to be technically feasible.
Uh-huh.
And it has to be something that we can work with planning to approve. So when those elements all line up, then that's when the application is submitted. And so when we initially reviewed the area, and approach to which are the candidates that are in on page 45 of your staff report. We did approach owners. So one or more of those elements fell out, whether it be opposition, whether it be technical feasibility, also getting significant power and things to the property. And so once we found a favorable candidate where all of those were approachable and feasible, then that's when the application is submitted. Lizanne came back afterwards and said, we need a little bit thicker of an alternative site analysis due to the, there are no current facilities in this restricted area or in the general vicinity. There's nothing to co-locate on typically that we would prefer to do. And so when she asked us to go back and look at these properties a little bit more thoroughly is when we came back with the most recent sort of thicker analysis, if you will.
Okay, so if you can go ahead and continue how you ruled out the other sites.
For two of the properties, it was not able, one of the properties was not able to obtain a lease. The existing facilities we were asked to analyze are on the other side of the ridge and don't reach this far into the area that we're trying to cover. And then the two that I had mentioned before were where we had letters of opposition when we were asked to revisit those properties.
Okay, you are not able to obtain a lease.
Correct.
Because?
For whatever reason, whether it be language, whether it be an agreeable rental amount, it can be any one of those factors.
But I guess I'm wondering, did you actually attempt to negotiate with the property owner?
Correct, and there is correspondence in the, I don't know if it's in the staff report, but I did submit it to Lizanne. I'm just trying to find that. Mr. Alpine was adjacent. So we do have a letter that was sent out to them. So we sent out a letter, certified mail, get it back saying that it was received, but we don't get a response. Mm-hmm. Then we consider that to be of non-interest. And so that was done in 2012.
Okay. Okay. So then that led you to this site.
Correct.
Okay.
And also favorable due to its existing vegetative
screening. You indicated it's a co-location site. So would that mean that that there would be the potential in, say, 5 years that, I guess this is being done for T-Mobile. That
correct.
T-Mobile might come back and say, oh, we're, you know, we just, gangbusters, we're growing, and we have an additional need for service. Could they potentially come back and locate additional antennas on this pole?
If I'm not mistaken, Lizanne can correct me. Yes, they could, of course. But I believe that comes back through the zoning administrator. I could be wrong, but
If the co-location is beneath the currently proposed facility on the pole, as shown on, the plans, that would be done administratively. If it was to go taller,
okay.
If there was any increase in height, that would have to come back for hearing.
Okay.
But I guess my question was because I was wondering, you know, if Verizon then says, well, we have that same gap in service, but potentially, if T-Mobile says, no, we've tied up all of the additional slots for co-location, you go find your own location. Okay.
I think there's conditions attached to the project that we must allow for co-location. We cannot, if there is space on the ground and there is space on that tower, we have to allow for it.
Okay. Okay. And the 78-foot height includes the height of the faux
correct.
Branches
yes.
and leaves. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let's go ahead and open up the hearing for further public testimony and comments. So if there's anyone present for application 171030, please come forward and state your name for the record, and we will give you 3 minutes to address this item. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Christine Denny, and we live at 899 Calabasas Road. We were not contacted about a cell site on our property. So she had mentioned our address. We were never contacted or looked at, and we're actually at a higher elevation. So we were not ever addressed, and I've been in that house 13 years. I just want to go over a couple quick things. First, the fact that there are buildings on that property that have no legal status. So while there's a crane out there right now that shows a view of what it will look like, when those buildings, if those buildings need to be removed, the view is different. So I just wanted to make a point about that, especially the larger building. Regarding the power up in that area, we have the same power pole as that project site. So the power comes in off of that address and comes to what used to be the Fesci address and our house. We lose power quite often. We lose power at least once a month. So we have very serious power problems up there having to do with, even if there's a car accident on Day Valley Road or Pleasant Valley Road or Freedom Boulevard, we lose our power. I'm sorry, I'm nervous. So we lose power quite often for extended periods of time. So I think a noise study has to be done on the generators, if there's generators that go in there, because we don't lose it for one day. We can lose it for weeks. You know, and I've lost it up to 4 or 5 days before. I'd like to see a copy of the agreement, because we haven't been given access to the agreement that these people went into. We don't know how long this lease is going to be. We don't know how, you know, how big it potentially could be, and we have no visibility to how long this is actually going to affect us. We live in a fire zone. These things do catch on fire. Again, I said we do have weather issues up there. I lost 5 trees this year. So the weather is a significant factor. We're very high up. We take the wind directly. We're close to the airport. I don't know how we are in some, I have a minute left. We are in the zone where we can't, we're in the emergency landing and takeoff zone. So I don't know how that's been looked at. And I'd like to know where else in the county and in a restricted area a 78-foot pole has gone. And again, the biggest thing I'm worried about is the power coming up there and the fires. And we have had fires in Trabings, and we had a fire the other day. What's being done? Now, I have trees that are bigger on our property line than the 78-foot pole. So if there's going to be a problem with transmission, how's it going to get through my trees? And that's the end. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I'm going to indicate before the next speaker comes up, you indicated you wanted to see the lease agreement. I'll just note for the record, the county is not a party to any lease agreement. This is between the, I'm assuming, T-Mobile and the property owners, so it's a private matter. So if they wish to share that with you, they may do so. Otherwise, they are not required to as part of this process. Let me ask that, if the speaker can come back to the mic also, I do have a question for you. You indicated you were not contacted. If T-Mobile or their representative had contacted you, would you have been open to negotiating for use of your property?
No.
Okay.
No, not for that size of a project. It's too big for the area that we're in. I don't even have a microwave in my house, so no.
Okay, so I guess I'm trying to determine what your concern is or why you would say no. Because of the size, the overall height, or
yes.
You indicated you lose power? Or
yes. Okay. I mean, well, for multiple reasons. I mean, we are in a fire zone. We've been evacuated for mandatory reasons.
Mm-hmm.
It's we live in a rural area on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
We went to this location to live in the woods, to have quiet, and to have a certain lifestyle. And I would not think that a commercial building such as that, I would not want that on my property. And besides the fact, our house is, you know, the county has been very strict with what we've been able to do in our house, including when we had a residential unit put in by the previous owners. They had a handicapped child, and it took them a very long time to get an RA unit, and with very, very strict, you know, conditions in order to build. So I don't even understand how something like this would be developed in our neighborhood.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anyone else that wants to address application 171030 on our agenda? Please come forward and state your name for the record, and we will give you 3 minutes. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Richie Wessling. We live at 867 Calabasas. our property is probably the one most affected by the cell tower. And very misleading photographs have been presented by Anthem about the visibility. We took some photographs ourselves, which I emailed to Lizanne. Mm-hmm. I hope you've seen them.
Yes.
But you can see on this picture, the cell tower as represented by this crane and the yellow flag looms directly over our property. It is readily visible from every section of our property. Contrary to Lizanne's statement that it's not visible, she just didn't go to the right places. It's visible everywhere on our property, and it's intrusively visible. It's like Godzilla over Tokyo. I simply cannot believe that the county would allow something like this in a neighborhood like ours, where, as the previous speaker pointed out, we moved there specifically because it is a beautiful rural area where, occupied by single-family homes, people with interest in country living. This place we bought 21 years ago, and it was a disaster area. We have worked and spent lots of money improving our property, making it a centerpiece of our extended family in the Bay Area. So we gather together frequently with our children and their children, grandchildren, family events, friends. And having the cell tower there is just, I can't express how upset we are about it. The thing that this was done without our knowledge, even though access to the site has to be across our property. The only way to get there is through a right-of-way on our property. And we were never consulted at any point in this process. And I just feel really put upon by Anthem and their deceptive tactics and the appearance of an incestuous relationship between Anthem and your staff. They're buying all of this stuff that Anthem has presented, which is biased to support their point of view, totally disregards the neighbors and how it affects them. And we're the people the county should be working to protect.
Okay, I have a question, sir. You indicated that the only way to get to this site is via a right-of-way on your property.
That's right.
So the road that leads to off of Calabasas as you go up to the proposed location, that road is on your property, you're saying?
Yes. The terrain is such that 875 Calabasas Road sits at the top of a very steep drop down to Calabasas Road. The only way to access it is by driving up across the corner of our property to get up to that point. And I informed Anthem very early in the game, back in January, that we did not want their trucks, their construction equipment, their people using that driveway. That driveway is intended for the people that live there, not for a foreign company coming
but
in.
But is there an easement agreement that allows this property owner, the owners Robert and Loretta Hunt, to use that roadway for access purposes?
For them to use that to access their property.
And is there something?
And also for 877.
Okay, is there anything in that agreement that prohibits them from having commercial vehicles or other vehicles from using
anything that services
road.
Their needs is
permitted?
Allowable.
Okay.
The cell tower doesn't furnish their needs. That cell tower is in their front yard.
Okay.
I mean, I feel bad for myself, but I feel even worse for them.
Okay.
I mean, this is crazy.
Okay, thank you. So once again, I think if there's an issue regarding that the use of that easement, that's probably a civil matter. I'm not sure that it's something that we can deal with as part of this hearing. Yes.
Have you seen our pictures?
Yes, I have. Yes. Is there anyone else that wants to address this item? Please come forward and state your name for the record, and we will give you 3 minutes. Good morning.
My name's Matthew D. Stoffel. I'm the owner of 877 Calabasas Road. I submitted a letter of opposition on behalf of myself and my neighbors. Also, an extensive report on and a brief that was done by an attorney that absolutely condemns this this whole proposal. I was born and raised in Santa Cruz, California. I'm 49 years old. I have roots to my property, 877, back to 1976. My mother's family raised her there. And in 2013, we bought our 877 Calabasas from the estate. Since then, I've invested every penny and everything I've ever made and worked on that property tirelessly to get it to where we could hand it on to our children. I have 3 minutes to explain what weighs in the outcome a 30-year lease, okay? This is the view from my neighbor's property of that pole. Tell me that that is not unobtrusive. You can almost see this from Highway 1.
I couldn't see it from Locken Valley, so you couldn't see it from Highway
1. Okay. You mentioned in your brief that there can only be one business on this property, and that's why Crest Apiers went away. In the 50s, White Calabasas Mutual Water Company was established there and services 10 homes in the community. It has its own 20-foot wide easement that is shared through the Westlings property as well as myself. My only port of egress in and out of that property is over my neighbor's property on his easement that he's gracious enough to let us use, and we're actually encroaching on him. If you look at the pictures that I submitted to Lizanne, you know, his property line is actually 10 more feet over. And the access for this company to come in is off of Highway 1 to Larken Valley to White Road to Calabasas and then a 180-degree turn. They have to come over two lanes of traffic and somehow narrowly squeak across an easement. It's our only point of egress. It's used by PG&E. It's used by propane providers. It's used by UPS, mail, garbage, you know, and various just people that live there. We're so impacted, we can't support a facility. This is not a commercial area, it's zoned RA, it's restricted. We're trying to make an addendum to put in big business in a residential neighborhood. It doesn't make any sense. I've had 2 years of sleepless nights in anticipation of this day. This is my permanent view for the next 30 years of my life, the end of my life, essentially. I'm 50 years old, you know? My whole community doesn't want this. My whole neighborhood doesn't want it. We have all invested our whole lives' works in this property. Every one of them is impeccably well-maintained and kept, you know? Thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address item number 2 on our agenda, application 171030? Please state your name for the record, and we will give you 3 minutes. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Nadine Brancifordi. My husband, Lewis, myself, and our families.
Lonnie, if you can. 3 minutes. Okay.
It says 3 minutes. Oh. Have lived across the street, directly across Calabasas Road from this proposed project for the last 25 years. We also were never contacted regarding this project until I received the blue notice in the mail about a week and a half ago. Just for the record, we and I believe all of our neighbors probably have Verizon coverage. We all have fine cell reception at our homes. You know, we don't see a need for this tower. Recently, when the staff report was made public, we got a good look at it. It really increased our concerns and our objections. First, very little, if anything, has been made, I'll bring it up one more time, about the abusive easement to access this project.
The two property owners in question, our neighbors, the Westlings and the Stoffels, were never included in any conversation regarding the project. Surely, in a rural residential zone, no one could have foreseen a variance for a commercial WCF approximately a quarter acre in size, if I understand correctly, 195 feet by 195 feet square concrete slab.
It's 15 feet by 13 feet.
In your report, it does say a concrete slab of 195 feet by 195 feet.
No, I think it's 195 square feet, which is 15 by 13.
My
area is 50 by 70, just to be that clear as well.
Okay, my misunderstanding, excuse me. But I do have to assume...
It's 3,600 square feet. Right?
We'll give you a chance. Go ahead.
We have to assume that when deeding the single parcel residential easement, that nobody was assuming a commercial project to this size would be in the future. Your report specifies that multiple non-permitted situations need to be rectified to grant the variance for this proposed project, though nowhere in your guidelines are deadlines or concrete stipulations laid out. Maybe most importantly is the concern over the White Calabasas Mutual Water District, which is the sole supplier of water to the 10 surrounding homes and their parcels. It is located on this property. A 20,000-gallon water tank, a pump house, a well, a water meter, and water lines to each home could be at risk from this project. No consideration at all seems to have been given to this situation. One would think this is a fundamental responsibility and that it really deserves precedence. In addition to this, we also have to take into account the possibility of groundwater contamination from potential PCBs and other possible pollutants as a byproduct of this project. Just as important is the potential impact of this proposed commercial variance on the essence of our neighborhood. We are almost all long-term residents, raising families, working, paying taxes, improving property, and participating in Santa Cruz County life. There are few remaining areas of the county where country living thrives. With rural residential and rural agricultural zoning, we all move here for the quiet beauty. Redwoods, meadows, olive groves, horse properties, and orchards are all part of our well-established community. The 25 homes closest to the subject parcel all have an average current value of approximately $1.2 million. These are huge investments for families. They take hard work and commitment, again, justified by the peace and beauty of our neighborhoods.
Okay, thank you. I think your time's up.
All right. I would like to speak a little bit longer. Can I have a half a minute?
We'll give you another minute. Yeah.
Thank you. Surely residents planning to move will recognize a reduced property value when they do as a result of this project. But once a variance for rural residential, rural agricultural zoning is issued, and commercial development permit for a wireless communication facility is established in the area, a precedent will have been established, making it easier for additional commercial practices to be adopted in the future. This is a huge concern for all of us, essentially eroding an established community and its traditions. Really, the zoning administration would approve an FTA exception to this local zoning of RA restricted is just, it's just really discouraging to all of us. It's baffling. I don't understand how Anthem Telecom has persuaded the county to ignore property owners and residents in our rural zoning to issue a commercial permit for a 30-year lease. Why should it forever change the face of our community just because it's cost-effective and convenient for Anthem? It is not the county's job to help Anthem Telecom appropriate space or see a profit.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time.
I have a question, ma'am. You mentioned the White Calabasas Water District.
Yes.
What is your concern regarding the water district being located on the same site?
The water district is on the proposed parcel. Mm-hmm. It is 4.8 acres. Mm-hmm. We have a 20,000-gallon water tank. We have the well. We have the county meter. We have the pump. And we have
water lines, that spider web from the tank to home to 10 different parcels in all directions. Any line is broken during construction, during heavy traffic, the homes will lose water. So that is a big concern. How often will we lose water? What will happen? You know, how quickly will it be addressed? Who will be responsible? In addition to that, I don't know that any study has been done to water table contamination as a result of, you know, possible pollutants from these towers and everything associated with them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to address application 171030 on our agenda? Now is the time to do so. Please come forward and state your name for the record. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Sharon Heckert, and I also live across the street at 870 Calabasas, and I'm definitely opposed to the cell tower. Number one, I do have good cell phone coverage, and my house is actually below the road, and so that's not an issue. I'm concerned about dropping property values. As Nadine stated, my house is also on this White Calabasas water system, and I'm very concerned about contamination over time, not to mention, you know, any problems that may arise during the construction of the cell tower. I'm worried about more, you know, heavy traffic on the road that I use, that I walk my dog on every day, and I'm very much concerned about the increase of EMF in our area.
Okay. So, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address this item? Please state your name for the record. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Angela Jennings, and I live in AA7 Calabasas Road. I'm very close to the place they're going to do it. I am very unhappy because the people that they signed the papers, the man died already, he's dead. But anyway, the people that signed the paper, before they signed the paper, they should have a meeting with the neighbors. They never say a word to anybody. I just find out not too long ago. I mean, why a secret? And the whole thing is about money, because the people get money from that company. I have Verizon, and I talk in my cellular phone all the time in my house. I mean, my husband, my kid, everybody have the cellular phone. So that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, this is not for Verizon, right? It's for T-Mobile service. Okay. Is there anyone else that has not spoken on item number two on our agenda? Please state your name for the record, and we'll give you 30 minutes. Good morning.
My name is Mary Wessling. My husband spoke previously. I quite agree with all of the points that have been made. I would like to make put a higher emphasis on human values. We purchased this property, as Rich noted. It was terrible. It was essentially a place where people didn't go to the garbage where they had to pay. They dumped it. He and our sons have spent 20 years renewing this property. We've planted a small vineyard. We've planted olive trees. And we have our grandchildren and their friends coming, better known as the farm. It is symbolic to us that this kind of life be preserved. And there are just too many ways in that I see that somehow or another this is going to be taken away from us and from our neighbors. And as I understand it, the job of the planning committee is to preserve the quality and the sense of the neighborhoods. This would destroy it. And I plead with you to reject this. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else I would like to address application 17?
I forgot to say something. Today is Rich's 85th birthday, and our family is there. And it is so hard, it's doubly hard for us to think that this is coming to an end.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address application 171030? Please come forward and state your name for the record, and we will give you 3 minutes. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Stephen Graves. I'm speaking on behalf of Anita Wilkins and my wife, Regina. They own the property at 210 White Road, which is right at the junction of Gillette and Calabasas. We also only received a blue notice very recently, and we had heard some rumblings about the problem of the Pacific Crest Apiary, which had been a long-standing business on the property, a cottage business, a local, fitting into the RA district. And that business has been run off the property as a result of this whole thing. That's really sad, especially considering the bees are so threatened as it is. And the applicant's very first statement was that they perceived a significant gap in this rural, remote, it's not really very remote, but it's rural. The gap is only in T-Mobile's bottom ability to serve their bottom line. I am a Verizon customer. I've had both Verizon and AT&T. I've never had issues with coverage. So, the county and the neighborhood there is not really responsible for making available total smotherage, is what it would be. I'm concerned about the future add-ons to that tower. She stated that they were required to provide access to anyone who wanted to stack onto that tower. Eventually, that thing could be bristling. They would apply for a height variation eventually, because once there's a legal standing, once the county allows a legal basis for these big, not local businesses, there, I have issues with AT&T. They have a perceived easement across our property that has been kind of abused. They were not good stewards, have not been good stewards of their easement. So I'm worried about that. I think that eventually it will be, it will grow and grow and impact the rural neighborhood. The applicant did say, that this rural area, something needed to be done about the gap. Well, gaps are what rural living is all about. You lose power, you lose water. It's actually all right at a certain point with us. And as an example, I want to say that I visited Nepal 30 years ago, which is the term of this lease, and then recently. At one time, you could walk out of Tamil District and see clear to Bodanath Stupa. And now I just recently visited, and it is solid city all the way. And that's what happens to rural communities. And once this big corporate, alliance has a footprint there, it tends to be abused, and it's very hard to control.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that has not spoken thus far that would like to speak on application 171030?
May I add one thing?
Yes.
There is right there at the crossroads of Calabasas and White Road, mm-hmm. a conservation reserve district right there. There's a spring there with salamanders. Mm-hmm. What is it called? RFD, Conservation Resource District. They have actually purchased the land to preserve that and done a whole bunch of work there. I seriously doubt that there was any consideration given to the environmental impact regarding that.
Thank you. Is there anyone else present that has not spoken on this application? We'll give you 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jason Goldich. I live on White Road, and I can't actually see the property regarding this issue from my house. I do walk by it and run and take my dog from time to time. So my concern isn't such like a visibility issue as for a lot of the people here that can see it. My concern regarding this issue more has to do with health potential health issues regarding EMF, EMR, electromagnetic radiation frequency. I don't know, I haven't done enough research on the long-term health effects of cell phone towers. I don't know, I'm not, you know, expert on that, but I have done a lot of research on EMF, EMR, on cell phone radiation, and there is very strong evidence that EMF, EMR from cell phone radiation alters DNA. There have been people who have won lawsuits against cell phone companies from they end up having brain cancer right exactly where they're putting their cell phone. So there is very strong evidence that EMF, EMR from cell phones can cause serious health effects. But you know, we can shut our cell phone off and on, but the thing is, with these cell towers, we have no control. They're emitting these frequencies all the time. And my concern is, I just don't know, and I don't know if, you know, the government, you know, the people who are deciding this, have enough information to safely say, you know what, these cell phone towers are safe. They're not going to have, people who live in there, you know, as close as many of these neighbors have, should have no worries whatsoever. There's going to be no health consequences. I don't know if we can say that. So if we can't say that, I think we really need to have serious reservations regarding the health effects of putting a cell phone tower that's going to be emitting these frequencies so close to people's properties. So that's my concern. That's why I'm here. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else that has not spoken on application 171030 and would like to do so if you've not spoken thus far? Now is your opportunity.
May I add one thing, please?
Yeah, I'll let you add something.
I work in epidemiology.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no settled science on the radiation issue at this point, because it is very difficult to quantify this kind of thing, a cluster, et cetera. There is, however, an animal study that has been done that does indicate the possibility. And the articles that I have read are saying we should think more about this. One of the points made, we didn't worry about cigarette smoking, even though there was hard evidence for many years. And yet we're willing to say, well, we don't think so. As an epidemiologist, as a scientist, and as a mother and grandmother, I think we need to be careful. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, is there anyone else that has not spoken on this item that would like to do so? Now is your opportunity. Okay, seeing that there is no one else present that would like to speak on item number 2 on our agenda, I'm going to close the hearing for further public testimony. And if the applicant can come back, or the applicant's rep can come back to the mic. What type of consideration was given as to the location on this property? Where specifically on the property, or, you know, is there the potential to set it back further, closer to the house?
Yes, we did look at that. There's a tree report included in your staff report. This is just the most ideal placement for the tower to clear those trees. I did want to point out too, on immediately following.
Well, okay. Oh, sorry. Let me follow up on that.
Sure.
Because. And I probably should have taken some photos myself when I went out there, but couldn't this be situated closer to, I want to say, coming back towards Calabasas, where you are closer to the residence?
To the main residence on the property?
Right. Or does it create an impact, a potential impact in terms of the RFs for the residents then?
No, it doesn't create that impact. I believe that there would need to be tree trimming of those trees to clear them.
Okay.
So I think that is an option, but there would be a tree trimming type situation.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's all the questions I have for the applicant. I have some questions for staff. There was reference made to the salamanders on White Road.
Well, this site was reviewed by the Environmental Planning Section of the Planning Department. The planner went out to the site, reviewed the location, is very keenly aware of salamander issues in this area. That is one of his main areas of expertise, and had no concerns.
Okay.
It's the site is located essentially in a manicured, or kind of manicured, lawn area. There's no existing biotic impact in that particular area.
Okay. What about the one of the speakers, and I noticed in my packet, there were some photos taken of the the guy pole, or the faux pole that was put up from the adjacent property. And it looks like it does tower above slightly the existing redwood tree. So is there a potential visual impact?
Well, as I said, I went out there and did an extensive visual survey. I don't have access to private properties, and so I would not have been able to have gone onto the Westling property to get the views that are in those photographs. I did look at that, and I, because of the adjacent large tree and knowing that there are trees all around the site, I was aware that if anyone would get a view from a neighboring parcel, that it would be something that would be set against the adjacent tree so that the tree would sort of mitigate the scale of it, and that it would also be coming above other intervening trees. So it wouldn't be just sticking up 78 feet from the ground. I don't believe that there's anywhere, except for from the house on the subject parcel itself, where you would literally see the entire tower. It's always going to be a faux tree in the context of other trees. So it's going to blend in with the natural vegetation. Obviously, it's not a natural tree. If you stare at it, you'll be able to see that it is a cell tower. But I don't believe it will stand out like a 8-story office building.
Okay. Are there any designated visual or scenic areas?
No, it is not in a scenic area.
So we can't say that there is a visual impact to any designated scenic or visual highways or areas.
Correct.
How about any impact on agriculture? Is there agriculture on this property?
No, there is no agriculture on this property.
Okay. Open space, is there a designated open space area?
It is not a designated open space area.
Okay.
There was a question on the water business. I just wanted to address that. The water business is actually located probably at least 300 feet on the opposite side of the dwelling from the proposed tower. It's up in the, as you kind of go, it was sort of, you kept going straight up the driveway, it would sort of be behind the house and beyond. I don't believe that there would be any impact on the water business from the proposed cell tower. No grading is proposed, so there is no opportunity, apart from the foundation for the tower itself, to damage any of the water lines. And I don't believe
how far
believe
down do they have to go with the monopole?
So I have not seen construction plans at this point. Those will be with the building permit.
Typically, how far do you have to excavate or going to the ground?
You know, I don't want to guess. This is just my educated guess, but please don't. Okay. I'm not part of the construction team, but I want to say about 15 feet.
Okay.
But please note that, as with any new construction, that we would have to do utility locate to locate every single water line on that property.
Right.
Yeah.
And have you been in touch, or has T-Mobile been in touch with the water, I guess, whoever's running the water company?
To my knowledge, not yet. If you did choose to approve the project today, then as part of that construction aspect, we would be obviously contacting them.
Okay, so once again, let me ask you, regarding the alternatives analysis, how many sites did you look at?
Three, and I do apologize for misrepresenting. We were, when looking at the alternative analysis, the two property owners that are opposing the project today, we could have looked at and evaluated, but we did assume after receiving letters of opposition that those were not viable options, and I believe they did state that they wouldn't support.
So you really looked at one
We looked at one other property,
okay.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so, you know, I went out a couple of times and looked at this site, and to be quite honest, I'm not sure that I have a serious concern with granting a telecom exception to allow a wireless facility on this property. I think because of, and I'm going to say because of, one, because of, and I did notice that there was the water district further on this property, as well as the fact that the property itself sort of sits inland or off of, not directly on Calabasas. So I'm not sure that it is, that it has a significant visual impact to surrounding properties. However, I think that there is the potential to look at lowering it from the 78-foot height potentially down to 75, maybe 74, maybe 73 feet. I think that that needs to be analyzed by the applicant. But in addition, I think that the applicant does need to go back and look at further alternative sites, since actually you only looked at one alternative site. And perhaps there are no other alternative sites. But I think to fully convince, I think, the county and to provide further assurance to the neighbors that you've done your due diligence, I think it is incumbent upon the applicant to go back and attempt to identify additional alternative locations, or perhaps go back and talk to, even though one of the neighbors said no, she absolutely would not consider that, but maybe go back and ask, why not, you know, if you've got a large enough site, why couldn't we put it at the rear of your property? I think also, as if we take a sort of continue this to take a break, I would ask the applicant to look at the physical location on this property. Perhaps you can move it another 10 to 15 feet where it has less impact on the neighbor that submitted the photos. So I think that there are some things maybe at play that the applicant can look at. Maybe setting it back 10 to 15 feet further, maybe bringing it down to 74, 75 feet rather than 78 feet. Maybe the redwoods do need to get, maybe they get trimmed, you know, by 2 feet or something in order to accommodate that. But in the end, hopefully we preserve the community character, have less of an impact on adjacent neighbors. And I do believe that over time, the redwoods will grow up further around this. And I do believe also that really what you're going to see, even though you, right now what you're seeing is this, what sort of looks like an obtrusive pole from your property, I think this faux monopine, which you'd actually see the last 5 feet would actually be the faux pine branches. And I think if they are able to fill in enough pine branches, you're not going to see the antennas, which are beneath that. So I think it would have even less of a potential visual impact on that neighbor. But I think the way that the code is written, I think there is an intent to allow wireless communication facilities on properties such as this, where an applicant, a carrier, has clearly done their homework and their engineers have gone out and determined there is a gap in coverage. And I agree, for Verizon, I've got Verizon. Wasn't a coverage issue for me. But I think for the other carrier, for T-Mobile or who else is out there, I think AT&T and some others, perhaps they would say, hey, we got a coverage, a gap issue out here as well. And so I think this one facility, which would serve as a future co-location site, perhaps for AT&T, if somehow we can structure this so that it never goes higher than that 74 or 75 feet, so that AT&T doesn't come in 2 years and say, oh, but we need to go up an additional 10 feet or 20 feet. So somehow we can condition this, get an agreement where it never exceeds that height, and therefore it's the property owner's responsibility to keep the redwoods down, so maybe the redwoods don't go up to 90 feet or whatever, maybe they go up to 77, 78 feet, so that you have no visual view of this at all. Then I think that, as indicated, preserves the community character, and I think that this proposal meets the spirit and intent of the code. However, as indicated, I think you do need to go out and do your due diligence. I think you need to look at some alternatives analysis, alternative sites. I think you need to go back to a couple of those property owners, and even if they say no, shut the door in your face again, then I think you can say we made repeated attempts to speak with those property owners and ruled out those sites. And then perhaps maybe you do look at and I don't know if micro, as I indicated, I don't know if microcells is feasible. Maybe you look at microcells. Maybe you say, maybe if we extend the existing utility poles by 5 feet, 7 feet, maybe perhaps microcells become a reasonable option. I don't know. Maybe they don't. But that perhaps is an alternative to be looked at as well. Another alternative, as I said, is to look at moving this 10 to 15 feet in another, in a further direction, bringing it down 4 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet. That's another alternative. So I think that I think there's still some due diligence or planning that needs to be done before we can land on saying this is the superior option and move forward on this. Having said that, I want to make clear to everyone that provided testimony this morning, I appreciate, we appreciate it. We're listening to you, but as indicated, I think that this proposal, I think with some modifications, likely would meet the spirit and intent of the code and likely would qualify for a telecom exception approval at this location. So, having said that, I'm going to continue this item. And I'm going to ask the applicant if a month gives you, do you believe that would give you sufficient time, or would you like us just to take it off of the agenda, give you as much time as you want? Why don't you come back to the mic? You can either say you want a month, or if you want us to just take it off indefinitely.
Let's take it off indefinitely, okay. And then we'll work with Suzanne. That way it gives us enough time and no one's rushed.
Okay. And so we will, at that point, we will reschedule this. We will send out notices to everyone once again. Everyone that's here, if you want to come back in at that time and provide additional testimony, provide additional correspondence, you may do so. You will receive adequate notice. The site will be posted once again. And hopefully we can come to some, I hate to say compromise, but just to a position where it doesn't feel like it's a significant intrusion for neighbors. Okay, thank you very much. That concludes that item. And we're going to move on to item number 3 on our agenda.
I thought she might continue it. It's kind of a way of... Make it look like you're really caring.
Okay, item number three on our agenda is application 171171 for 645 37th Avenue in Santa Cruz. It is APN 03208211, and this is a request to remodel an existing non-conforming two-story single-family dwelling to raise the rear portion by around 2 feet to provide a standard interior ceiling height and to convert an existing non-habitable workshop, one-bedroom and living room area to a one-story accessory dwelling unit with one additional parking space. This application requires a variance to recognize two existing parking spaces for the dwelling, where the code requires three, to obtain a variance to recognize paved parking that exceeds 50% of the required front yard area, and also requires a coastal exclusion in the R15PP zone district. This property is noted as located at 645 37th Avenue, about 200 feet north of the intersection with Floral Drive in Live Oak. The owner is Gordon Thompson. The applicant is Sandy Barker. It is a supervisor District 1. Project planner is Lizanne Jeffs, and we will ask for a brief staff presentation.
Yes, good mornings. So this property is approximately 5,311 square feet in size, and it's located on the west side of 37th Avenue, just over 1,000 feet northwest of the coastal bluff at East Cliff Drive. The parcel is zoned R15PP, which is a single-family residential parcel that's in the Pleasure Point Combining District, a designation that allows residential uses, and the proposed remodel dwelling will be a principal permitted use in the zone district. This zoning is consistent with the site's urban medium residential general plan designation. The project site is set in a mixed neighborhood that consists of one-story, mostly older beach cottages, together with a few two-story homes that exhibit a wide variety of architectural styles. The existing house and attached non-habitable workshop was constructed on this parcel in 1930. And because it was built prior to the application of site and development standard, it's now non-conforming, a non-conforming structure in that it doesn't fully conform to the required side yard setbacks or the required front yard setback. This project proposes a remodel of the existing two-story single-family dwelling that will convert the non-habitable workshop, one of the bedrooms in the existing house and also a living area, to a one-story ADU or accessory dwelling unit. And it will also remodel the house, and this includes raising the rear portion of the dwelling by about 2 feet to provide standard interior ceiling heights at the back of the dwelling. The existing covered porch at the rear of the dwelling will be demolished, and a small section of the non-habitable workshop will be remodeled to create a covered entry for the proposed ADU. The proposed remodel of the existing house will not result in the reconstruction of the structure as defined by county code, and therefore the existing non-conforming dimensions of the older home can be retained. Because the proposed 2-foot increase in height at the rear of the house is required solely to provide standard interior ceiling heights at the lower floor, the planning director has determined that this change does not require the approval of a variance. So the resulting dwelling will have a reduced floor area from the existing and will continue to be visually compatible and in scale with and integrated into the character of the surrounding neighborhood. Although the proposed remodel doesn't require any development permit approvals itself, the application does include a request for two variances for parking, one to reduce the required number of spaces for a three-bedroom dwelling and a one-bedroom ADU from 4 spaces to 3 spaces, and the other to increase the area of the paved parking area to 75% of the front yard area. So as set out in county code, the existing 4-bedroom dwelling would require 3 parking spaces, but currently, there are actually only 2 parking spaces on the parcel that meet the minimum standards. They would have to be located parallel to the street on the paved area in front of the dwelling. And this paved area is already non-conforming to the 50% maximum, in that I think it's nearly 60%. So the proposed remodel will end up with a 3-bedroom dwelling, so it's 1 bedroom less than the existing house. And then the 1-bedroom ADU. So even though there are no additional bedrooms on the parcel, because of the addition of the ADU, a 3-bedroom dwelling would be required to have 3 parking spaces with 1 additional space for the ADU to result in a requirement for 4 spaces. So this project therefore proposes adding one additional parking space. It'll be in what is currently kind of a courtyard area close to the entrance of the dwelling, and then also reorienting one of the existing parking spaces by creating additional paved parking so that it will be parallel to the southern property boundary. So there'll be two tandem spaces there, and then it maintains one of the parallel spaces along in front of the dwelling on the paved parking area. I do want to point out, though, that because the paved area extends out into the right-of-way, and it's about 17 feet 9 inches, which is only 3 inches short of a standard parking space, that in practical terms you can actually probably get, once the new area is created, you'll be able to get about 5 cars on the parcel without any problem. So I don't believe that parking will be an issue. The revised parking layout, as I said, will require a little bit of additional parking. That's sort of extending the area further back into the courtyard, and that will increase the paved parking area to about 75% of the front yard setback area. And again, I believe that is appropriate because obviously we need to provide the additional parking on this site. There are full findings of the variances enclosed in the staff report. So based on the findings, staff believes that as condition, the project is consistent with the applicable codes and policies of the zoning ordinance and the general plan and the local coastal program, and therefore recommends that the zoning administrator determine is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act and approve application number 171171.
Okay. Is an encroachment permit required for the pavement along the front?
With this permit, the project was not reviewed by the encroachment division, and I believe it was also not reviewed with the building permit that has been running concurrently. The paving has been there some time. It's existing, mm-hmm. So there will be no additional encroachment created by this permit. So the planning department has not required an encroachment permit, but if the encroachment division of Department of Public Works were to require one, the applicant would have to work with DPW to obtain that.
Okay. How about, does the design review ordinance, why are they not required to comply with that?
This will reduce the size of the existing dwelling, although it will increase the height at the rear by about 2 feet. I know that the architect worked as hard as possible to make the changes as absolutely minimal that would be required just to get the standard ceiling heights. But under Chapter 1311 of County Code, a small addition like this is exempt from review under the Design Review Ordinance.
Okay. Okay, so let's go ahead and open up the hearing for public testimony. If the applicant or applicant's representative is present and would like to address this item, now is the time to do so. We will give you 3 minutes. You're not required to address this item, but if you want to go on record regarding any proposed conditions, findings.
I'm the applicant, Sandy Barker, Barker Wagner Architects. I'm here with the owner. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I think the drawings are self-evident. We were trying to do a minimum remodel. It will actually be used by both the owner and the owner's son as a family for a while. That's what the ADU is all about, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address item number 3 on our agenda, application 171171. Good morning. Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Ruth Siegel. I live next door at 651 37th Avenue. And first I want to say I'm not opposed. I think it's a beautiful design, and I want to welcome you all. I've met Alex, but I haven't met anyone else yet. So, and I'm very happy that this is not a vacation rental or a cell tower. So, I just wanted to be here to be proactive in protecting my privacy and my solar panels, and was told by Lizanne that they didn't require a solar study because it's conformed standards height or below the maximum. And I am in one of the tiny one-story bungalows that's left in the neighborhood. And Alex did show me a shade study that was done. I just want to make sure for the record that my solar panels will be protected. One question that I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to meet you before. Concerned about privacy issues. I do have an outdoor shower on the south side of the house. It's pretty much protected by trees. But I just want to make sure that there's, you know, I'm not sure if you have any decks planned that might overlook my yard. I would just hate to hear, you know, some years from now that there's a complaint of nude sunbathing in my yard by somebody, you know, looking out their balcony and, you know, where we sort of have the yard landscaped for privacy.
Did you get a chance to look at the plans?
I did look at the plans, but I really wasn't able to decipher all the details, okay. And nobody in the planning department was able to interpret that. Lizanne wasn't there at the time. And so I apologize I didn't get a chance to meet the architect beforehand to get these questions answered. I'm happy with the parking. I think that's not going to be an issue once you know, he explained that currently, the cars just park perpendicular to the street, and so I don't think that's going to be an issue.
You know what? Why don't you walk over by Lizanne and point out where your property is at, and then we can maybe clarify whether or not it's going to have any impact if they have a deck or something proposed.
So this is the elevation you currently look at. This is what's happening. So basically, this is being picked up a little bit. It's keeping, so we end up with a flatter roof. There's no.
So it's going to go up to.
It's coming from the same location right here.
From here is going to be up to. So that's going up quite a bit. This is going up 2 feet. This is going to go up.
Yeah, but there's no
feet.
Loss of privacy. Okay. There's a little. These are very high windows. These are above eye level.
Okay. I think they're over here.
Right now, the roof is sort of like here, and here. So I mean, it's this corner. Mm-hmm. There's a high window here that you would, you know, someone who's in the room, it would be above eye level. Mm-hmm. And likewise, these two windows, they're for light.
Mm-hmm. But I think those high windows are already existing, but they're off a stairway.
There are two new windows at the north elevation, but they appear to be at the top of the wall, so they would be above eye level. And one.
They're over a bedroom.
And there's going to be one little window again at, you know, above eye level on the front elevation, which I don't believe there will be any privacy issues from. And then the roof is being picked up so that it's going from sloping to sort of almost a flat roof. So there'll be a little triangular area of additional wall, but the overall height is only going up 2 feet.
And there's no decks.
There's no decks. I don't believe there's a privacy issue. These windows here. Those are existing.
The fence goes up there.
Yes, so I don't think I looked at that. And then with regard to your solar panels, they're actually in relation to this, because the back portion of the property where it's two-story and is an existing two-story, it's 45 feet back from the street. And off the top of my head, I can't remember the figure, but it's a considerable distance. It's, I think, at least 25 feet, possibly more, further to the west than the solar panels. So the only time that it could even potentially shadow the solar panels would be right at sunset, when you're not really.
Yeah, there's other trees in the back.
Looked at that quite closely and had no concerns. And I know that the architect did also do a shade study, and I talked to him. I haven't seen that, but they assured me that there would be no shading of the solar panels.
Okay. So do you feel comfortable, or do you feel like you had your issues addressed by staff?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, is there anyone else who would like to address application 171171 on our agenda? Now is the time to do so. Okay, seeing that there is no one else present, I'm going to close the hearing from further public testimony. I am going to determine that this project is exempt from further environmental review under the California Environmental Quality Act. I'm going to approve application number 171171 based on the findings and conditions incorporated in the staff report. And that concludes this matter. Thank you.
So I want signatures.